And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Welcome to Spin Rate, presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. That's right, this is Spin Rate, the Athletics Toronto Blue Jays podcast. My name is Drew Fairservice, and I'm so excited. This is going to be, well, they're all, each individual episode is one of my own sweet, beloved children, but I am so excited for this episode in particular, because, boy, the Blue Jays had an entertaining and interesting weekend, and boy, did it come at the expense of one of the kind of main characters in the Blue Jays narrative over the last half decade, let's say. Before we go any further, I, of course, am excited. I am equally excited to welcome back the main character of Spin Rate. She covers the Toronto Blue Jays for The Athletic. Her name is Caitlin McGrath. Caitlin, how are you?
I'm great. I mean, at best, we're both co-stars of the narrative that is this podcast. I wouldn't say I'm the main character.
Listen, I know what side of the bread upon which the show is buttered. You can do it. Without me, you bring the thunder. I just put the, I don't know what I'm saying. I'm like the storm chaser. I'm the guy driving around in the Bronco in the cornfield, and you are the thunder and lightning. I don't know. It doesn't matter. There was nothing short of fireworks like thunder and lightning in Buffalo this weekend as the Blue Jays took on the Texas Rangers. But that's not the only, you know, large explosion that's reflective of celebration. There are a thing worth celebrating, which is, of course, the news that the Toronto Blue Jays are coming back officially to Toronto to play games in the beautiful city of Toronto at the somewhat adequate stadium that's within the beautiful city of Toronto. July 30th, they will be there. Caitlin will be there. I will not be there, probably, but it's all happening. So before we get into this week's episode, I, of course, will do the housekeeping parts, which is to encourage you to subscribe to The Athletic, where you can read all about the beating of the Rangers this weekend. You can read all about the post-draft stuff. We've talked a lot about the draft in the last couple of weeks, Caitlin and I, and then Jeff Paternostro and I this week. So if you missed either of those, you can go. Jeff and I went long. Really great to chat with him about some of the players the Blue Jays chose and kind of the state of the Blue Jays farm system, as maybe they look to make some trades, look to convert some of that prospect capital into big league talent, as this Blue Jays team looks maybe sort of kind of poised to maybe kind of sort of do something worthwhile this season. So go to theathletic.com/spinrate, subscribe to The Athletic. They'll give you a tiny discount. You can read all of Caitlin's trade proposals. And then when they do make trades, fingers crossed, she will break them down for you and you can read it. If you want to listen to this show, you don't have to be a subscriber, but if you are, you can listen to it ad-free through the Athletic app. But if you aren't a subscriber, that's cool too. We thank you. I thank you, Caitlin, I assume, thanks you. I mean, you know, she is the star of the show, but she doesn't have an ego, so she's appreciative and gracious of you listening to the show, which you can do anywhere you get your podcasts, whether you subscribe to The Athletic or otherwise, at Spotify, at Apple Podcasts, at places that aren't monkeying with your personal information, which like is probably nowhere. It's the internet, but you know, Stitcher, Overcast, wherever you get your podcast, go sign up, give us a rating, give us a review, subscribe, do all that great stuff. We appreciate it. We've had a great first half of the season here for Spin Rate, and we're thankful for everyone who's been along for the ride, and we hope that you are along for the ride here into what should be a very interesting second half. It's going to be an interesting end all August and September, as the Blue Jays are going to play some baseball games there in Toronto in front of fans at the Rogers Centre. But let's pause on that first. Let's talk about the weekend that was, and then we will talk about the homestand, the homecoming that will be. Wow. The Blue Jays just, they beat those Rangers real, real bad. They beat them up something good.
They outscored them 25-2.
25-2 in three games. Now, in that three games that were only two of which were only seven innings because the game on Saturday was rained out. So then the Blue Jays and Rangers played two games on Sunday after a drubbing on Friday night, which was, it was 10-2, right?
Yes.
10-2, two runs coming in kind of not garbage time, but a late home run coming with the score that was 10-0 in the top of the ninth. Then the Blue Jays on Sunday win 5-0 in the opener and then 10-0 again in the second half, clubbing innumerable home runs off of Mike Foltynewicz. And I think that was it. That was he. All the damage came against Folty, who was out there kind of left to wear it after a very rough and long first inning. Let me ask you this quick, Caitlin. We can start here on Sunday. I think the Steven Matz is kind of an interesting character. So let's start with Steven Matz. Before, let me interrupt myself. Steven Matz is maybe the guy who's kind of pitching for his job these days. He looked great. He's pitching for his job because his is the one that might get upgraded if the Blue Jays decide they might want to make a move for now. This is the premise that I'm operating from. But can you put much stock in a performance, strong as it was, by Steven Matz? You know, I think he went five innings, struck out two, maybe. I don't think he walked anybody. Struck out two, struck out three.
Two. No walks, yeah. Three hits, I think.
That sounds about right. Three hits, two strikeouts. You're reading it. I'm trying to remember.
No, it's in my brain.
There you go. Well done. It's half in my brain. But the question is there value from an evaluation standpoint, being like, hey, this is a guy we can count on because that Texas Rangers lineup is so truly embarrassing and like a disgrace. They are not a big league team. Like straight up. There's one good player on that team, and his name is Joey Gallo, and he's going to play for the Blue Jays soon. And then they'll be left with a replacement-level squad that would lose to the actual Buffalo Bisons, not the Toronto Blue Jays.
Well, with Steven Matz, it's actually like sort of an interesting question, just because I don't know that it's purely just about his results. I think that he's had sort of a disjointed last couple of weeks. If you consider he did have somewhat of a nice start, I think, against the Red Sox way back when, and then he went on the COVID IL and then he missed a couple starts and then he came back. And obviously he was a little bit rusty and you have to kind of get back into your rhythm and he had to build up his pitch count again. And then he has two starts, I think it was, and then the All-Star break happens. So again, like the rhythm that starting pitchers so crave. And I think that Steven Matz, I don't know that he's Robbie Ray level of guy who loves his routine, but or even Hyunjin Ryu of guy who loves his routine, but he strikes me as a guy that does like to get into a rhythm and seems to thrive more just because, you know, he's not a pitcher that throws super hard and he does have to kind of rely on like fastball command and all that kind of stuff. So I do think that rhythm is quite important to him. And so from that point of view, just seeing him have a good start and get out there. And I think he was up to like 70 pitches or something, five innings. You know, maybe that's just at least something that he can build off of in terms of just like, you know, pitch count, length, and controlling a lineup. Yes, it's the Texas Rangers lineup. And I think now that we think back, like he had his first really nice start of the season. His first start of the season, I believe, was against the Rangers, right? And he also looked really good in that first start of the season. So clearly the Rangers lineup, you know, is a good lineup for him to face. He's done it twice now and he's managed them quite well, as did all the Blue Jays pitchers this series, obviously. But you raise a good point, and you know, maybe I'll like suggest something that I've been thinking, and I don't know what the Blue Jays would do if they do upgrade at starting pitcher, and certainly they could do that. I think that there's a definite case that they should do that. But I wonder if it's Matt's pitching for his job, which it very may well be, or if the easier decision, even though it's sort of unfair, is to move Ross Stripling to the bullpen just because he's a guy that's done it before and he kind of came into the season understanding that at some point he may go to the bullpen and he's kind of outlasted maybe what anyone predicted that he would last in the rotation. And I don't know what Matt's would do in the bullpen. I just wonder if it's a better play for the team, building a bullpen and building the starting staff, and how each pitcher would respond to that, if it makes more sense for Shipling. But I mean, you raise a good point, and I think the other side of that is just like, you keep the pitchers who are pitching the best in your rotation, and that's just what you do. And if Steven Matz is the fifth guy, then he just falls off and he goes to the bullpen, and maybe he just kind of replaces a guy like Anthony Kay in the bullpen right now, right? And he's sort of a long guy, and maybe he can throw a little harder from the bullpen. I don't know what he would look like. I don't know that he's ever pitched from the bullpen. I'd have to look at his Baseball Reference and see if he ever has, but can't imagine he has much.
To me, it'd be interesting, and you said something that you just kind of said it. That's what we do in these things. You're like, he doesn't throw that hard. Steven Matz throws, his average fastball this year is 94.8 miles an hour, which is not hard in 2021 baseball terms, but it's absurd in like human being terms, yeah. Right? And I mean, he touched today at one point, he touched 96 with his fastball. So that's hard. And I wonder, in terms of bullpen pieces between he and Ross Stripling, if that kind of stuff wouldn't play up a little bit. And I mean, Steven Matz is basically a two-pitch pitcher anyway. So, you know, you're not asking him to turn a lineup over. You can maybe get away with throwing, you know, changeups to if he's in there facing lefties, or, you know, if his fastball, whatever the different matchups you could play. I think it might be interesting to see him just because he does just throw that much harder. And I mean, I don't know. I'm just kind of in my head. Same thing. Like, does he have better stuff than Ross Stripling? Probably. You know, Ross Stripling is good at what he's good at, and he's pitched well, and he's been effective as like an inning. Not, I wouldn't even say innings eater, but like he's not a huge strikeout guy. Neither is Matz. He only struck out two today. But like, I don't know. I just think, I mean, neither of them are a guy who immediately jumps to mind as like, you move him to the bullpen and he's going to become an animal. It is interesting to see how Matz, as an example, just because of the extra bit of velocity, might fare in the bullpen. But if he pitches like that, if he gets to face a team like the Rangers in the playoffs, improbably, he would be great because he seems to own them. And he I think you could safely say that he made a lot of good pitches. You know, he's working this fastball up in the zone. You know, I can't think, you know, there was the double from Kiner Falefa. That was like just sort of like a squirt down the right field line that the Rangers leadoff hitter, catcher come shortstop, stretched into a double, not particularly hit hard. You know, there weren't a lot of balls that were scalded and that just, that made anything other than Matz was like in control. He ended up pitching really, really well. And it's encouraging for Steven Matz. It's encouraging if you're the Blue Jays, because if you do make a move, having a guy like him and Stripling around is not a bad problem to have, even a little bit.
Yeah, that's one of those things where like there's some moves where I like can comfortably say like, I think the Blue Jays are going to do this, or I think the Blue Jays should do this, or I can just really kind of predict it. But the sort of conversation of like who would be the guy that gets bumped to the bullpen, to me, it's like sort of a toss up. And I honestly wouldn't be surprised really either way. And I could see the argument either way. And like, it would just be a matter of like maybe some numbers or maybe some situations that like the Blue Jays would have more insight on, just from like a coaching staff perspective or like a management or whatever analytics staff perspective.
Piggyback them. Go old new school with like, depending on the matchups, you bring Matz out, send Matz once through the lineup, then you bring Stripling in. And then depending on what the other team looks like, you switch it up on them. You just get right in there, kitchen.
Yeah.
Now I think that's a good idea. An idea that I started out saying half-assed and like with like out the side of my mouth. Now I'm like, you know what? You could do worse. Let's go. Hyunjin Ryu pitched a complete game, 7-inning complete game, yeah. as it is. But he, speaking of velocity, was up to, I believe, 93 today. A guy who it's been said, you know, rumbles and mumbles a few times over the here in his second year with the Blue Jays about he does like when he has the opportunity to get an extra day of rest, I should say. And here coming out of the All-Star break with a few extra days of rest. Now you're looking at Hyunjin Ryu looking like $1 million. Not only throwing a bit harder, but I know that there was some commentary about Ryu and Pete Walker looking to adjust his arm slot, which may have fallen or dropped a little bit. And you know, if they were able to correct that, and then he's looking good again against a terrible lineup. But you know, that those are the things you look to see: the command and then a little bit of velocity, and you know that Ryu is going to be good to go.
Yeah, I think the arm slot was specifically in reference to the changeup, which obviously is sort of like his bread and butter pitch. And it's such a, I guess you could say, like a fickle pitch, maybe, that something like an arm slot, minor difference, would make a major difference in terms of the actual pitch, right? And like pairing that with Ryu, like you said, he went up velocity to 93, but that's not hard, really, in major league terms. Still in human terms, yes, but
in human terms, if you saw a car driving on the highway at 93 miles an hour, you would want to call the police because they're a maniac. Yeah. And here he is. It's like, oh my God, Grandpa! Like, get it together, kind of. Yeah. Put your back into it.
Yeah, but yeah, just the change up and is sort of the pitch that's made him the pitcher who he is, dating back to, I think, his time in the KBO. So nice for him to have that pitch working for him once again. And hopefully that this is sort of a period where he, you know, the All-Star break rejuvenated him a little bit. And then, you know, maybe his, gosh, what month are we in? July is going to look more similar to like his April and May as opposed to the June, which really was like, you know, might have been one of the worst months of Ryu's career overall, Blue Jays career and Dodgers career.
Very much out of character. Yeah. I think it was like 5 or 6 starts in a row that were just significantly below the standard that which you know he has set for himself. Mm-hmm. You know, over a very strong career between LA and now Toronto, a standard that earned him, what did he get, $83 million, whatever the Blue Jays gave him, like
$80 million.
Yeah, a good nice little chunk of change. He looked good. Mats looked good. Bullpen looked good. Rangers made it all possible. We'll be right back with more Spin Rate, but first, check this out.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
We've talked a little bit on the show over and over about the opportunity that the Blue Jays are presented with in terms of building off of the sort of career year of Marcus or second career year of Marcus Semien, kind of similar, very strong contender for career year for Robbie Ray, potential career year for Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Bo Bichette figuring it out, you know, just strong performances, Teoscar Hernandez sort of figuring it out. There are a lot of indicators that are pointed up, and it's important for our team or for a management team perhaps to make sure they do what they can to capitalize on that. And I think about the second game of the doubleheader today, which was the Blue Jays showing so much of what they're capable of in one little like snapshot. So this is not specific. The Blue Jays are playing the Texas Rangers, who are terrible. Mike Foltynewicz is having a terrible year. I think he's given up 28 home runs now after giving up 4 bombs today. But the Rangers presented the Blue Jays with an opportunity in that first inning. First inning? Second inning. When there was a blown call. So there were first and third. There were 2 out. And who was at the plate? I don't remember who was at the plate. And Foltynewicz threw like a curve or a slider, and it caught the outside corner, but whoever was the runner on first, that might have been Semien, bluffed off of the bag. And And I think I've got the situation kind of wrong. But the runner bluffed off the bag, and then what's his name? Jonah Heim or Heim, who was the Buffalo native who started for the Rangers, and was which is a great story. It's a great story that he's made into the big leagues. He went dramatically, like right running and sort of sliding out of the catcher's box, for lack of a better term, to like be ready to make a throw. Definitely kind of cut the umpire's view off a little bit, and obviously was doing lots of motion. And then the ump blew the call. It would have been strike three. The Blue Jays, given that opportunity, went on to have a huge inning, and then were up 10-0, you know, in a heartbeat. Same thing with, in another situation where Marcus Semien was on first base. There was a ground ball hit to the second baseman. Instead of allowing himself to get tagged, Marcus Semien turned and ran back to first base, forced the guy to chase him down, whichever rando, might have been Nick Solak, I guess, to make a tag and then throw the ball onto first base. Double play not made. Brock Holt, there was a slow roller hit across the infield. Brock Holt came running in. It was going to be a close play anyway, but Brock Holt sort of lost his balance. Whoever was, it might have been Teoscar Hernandez, chugging down the line, beats it out. He's safe, you know, whatever, eventually cut to grand slam. Like, now, while the Rangers, who are so bad, provide that opportunity, I think that's like good teams capitalize on those opportunities. Good teams don't let bad teams off the hook, I think. And I think that while anyone looks like a good team compared to the Rangers, the Blue Jays, to me, by pounding on them this weekend, look like a good team. Right. They didn't screw around. They didn't, you know, a guy like Mats, or, you know, some of the guys that came out of the bullpen on Friday or then on Sunday, weren't nibbling. They didn't walk the ballpark. They were like, we are better than this team. Let us demonstrate that by hitting home runs, by when they give an opportunity, they took it and they just throttled them. This is, that the extra half game, I don't know, that extra, the difference between winning 2 out of 3 against a team like the Rangers and winning all three is huge. So for the Blue Jays to be able to do that, I don't know. To me, it's like, it's not nothing. Maybe I'm crazy, but watching them be able to take advantage of a team that they were probably going to beat the Rangers in the second game of the doubleheader anyway, but the way that they did it, it makes me, again, not you were talking about this off there. I'm not going to be like, this is 2015 all over again, but like, this is a good team that we're watching. This is a good team that has a chance to continue to be good and really make a lot of noise here in the second half. I don't know. I got my fanboy glasses on right now.
No, I think you make a lot of good points. I will say that is something the Blue Jays have done fairly well this year in terms of beating teams that they should beat. Like, they have put together a pretty good record against teams that they are, you know, better than in the standings, or teams that they should on paper beat. And they have done a fairly good job of that. I think the interesting thing with the Blue Jays season, and something that will kind of determine their second half, is how they start playing against teams that are more difficult to beat, like teams that are playing above 500. You talk about, the sharpness of which they played against the Rangers, but we've seen the complete opposite of that when sometimes the Blue Jays look a little, shell-shocked or nervous or out of sorts when they play a team like the Rays. And sometimes the Rays can really expose them, in terms of, defensive deficiencies or, base running blunders. Like, we've seen that before, and it's certainly not something that's like, I don't think that the Blue Jays are a bad team by any means, but I do think that they have to play better against good teams. And I just was like, I was searching as you were talking, so I was trying to look up their record. And I think their record, if this is correct, is 26-33 against teams above 500. So they have a losing record against teams above 500. It's not terrible by any means. Like, a couple more wins here and they're, 30-33, right? It's getting closer. And that sort of leads us to the rest of this week, or I guess this coming week, where they play the Red Sox this week, and then they play three games, and then they play the Red Sox again next week, four games. So 7 games against the Red Sox here coming right before the trade deadline. And I'm not necessarily one that wants to circle series and say this is a pivotal series and this is a pivotal series, because, you know, you could probably make an argument that there are many pivotal series then throughout the season, or you could make the counter argument that, like, you know, none are pivotal because they all kind of matter. But anyway, I do think that how they play against the Red Sox, though, is going to be important. Like, I don't think they have a winning record against the Red Sox right now. I think they're 4-5 against them. So not too off, right? Like, if they win on Monday, then they're .500 against the Red Sox. But, that is something that if the Blue Jays do want to be a playoff team, they're going to have to start playing better against good teams. And they're also going to have to start playing better against the two teams that they're chasing in the division, the Rays and the Red Sox.
The Blue Jays have a losing record against the Red Sox. They are 4-5, as you said, but they have outscored the Red Sox in those games by 20 runs.
Right. Well, one of those games was probably because they scored 20 runs in one game.
That'll be a good way to do that. you brought up a good point, which is that what the Blue Jays did to the Rangers today is what the Rays do to a lot of teams. Number one, the Rays force you into mistakes because they are very aggressive and they are a very athletic team that is capable of doing lots of different things. They don't have standout players. They're not there to stand and wait their turn to take advantage, but they don't make a lot of those mistakes on themselves, being a very keen run prevention team, and also, you know, a good team that runs the bases, whatever else. So the Rays put that kind of pressure on teams that the Blue Jays didn't need to put on the Rangers, because the Rangers put that pressure on themselves by being so bad. If you follow me on Twitter, you would have, I can't not do this, I'm sorry. You would have probably seen me go through this today, which is watching the Blue Jays play the Rangers today was really interesting to me, because the Blue Jays and the Rangers faced off in the 2016 American League Division Series. The Rangers had won their division, the American League West. The Blue Jays had not won their division. Now, that was before the Astros were good, but only by a year, right? The Astros won the World Series the next year. Didn't they? Yeah, they did. 2017, right? That was the way year that they cheated and won. Who won the World Series in 2018? Oh, the Red Sox did. Jesus, how did that happen? Anyway, Blue Jays and Rangers, right there. ALDS, 2016. Rangers a good team. Blue Jays a good team. Blue Jays swept them. Mm-hmm. Now, fast forward 5 years later. The Blue Jays made the playoffs last year. The Rangers had the second worst record in baseball. The Rangers right now have the third worst record in baseball. The Blue Jays right now are, 7 games over .500? They are, especially after this, after outscoring the Rangers by 20-something runs this weekend. It's only going to increase their stake, as, you know, they're standing among the teams with the best run differentials in baseball. The Blue Jays right now are good. The Rangers right now are bad. The Blue Jays have young impact players in place on the team, making that team good, homegrown teams. The Rangers have none. They have Joey Gallo, who's 1 year away from free agency. The Rangers have a not very good farm system. The Rangers farm system is in the bottom. It was maybe 21st, 22nd, 23rd in baseball, depending on who and what you read. Now that Rangers have improved that by drafting Jack Leiter, but the Blue Jays farm system was in the top 5, depending on who you look and who you ask. Keith Law, I believe, had them second here at The Athletic. I know that, who did I see? MLB.com, the Blue Jays in 6th. Fangraphs has like a player evaluation tool where it's like all the combined value of the prospects in the system. The Blue Jays ranked 2nd behind the Rays in that team. Like, these two teams went in very divergent paths, watching the Rangers kick it around, and Josh Donaldson slides in and all the way from 2nd on what would have been a routine ground ball. And that seemed like it set the Rangers onto a terrible path, because there's lots of things that you can criticize the Toronto Blue Jays front office about. But if you look at where that team is and where this team is today, man, you wouldn't trade places with them for all the money in the world. If you're a Blue Jays fan, if you cover the Toronto Blue Jays compared to perhaps covering the Texas Rangers, where you spent the weekend writing love stories to Buffalo, because you sure as hell are not going to write about the team on the field. Like, the Rangers are bad now, and they're only going to get worse, right? They're not going to get better this year. there's nobody knocking on the door ready to come and take over and lead the next vanguard of Rangers talent to the promised land. It's brutal. They are and watching that lineup today, they have one good player in Joey Gallo. They have Adolis Garcia, who is a great story, who made the All-Star team, and that's mm-hmm. awesome. If you asked me what his line will look like at the end of the season and will it be higher or lower than Randall Grichuk's, I don't know that I would have an answer for you. There's a little bit of pumpkinry going on about Adolis Garcia, which is a shame. Again, great story. He's made some great plays, had a lot of home runs. The Cardinals don't mess up player development too often, so maybe I'm maybe a little appeal to authority. I can't imagine watching that team every single day because they are awful. And they have those misplays. They have that lack of situational awareness of that Jonah Heim, Raheem, who there's two outs and two strikes. Just catch the ball, get the strikeout, go sit down. Don't worry about trying to throw out a guy who's not even running. You know, and then you got Foltynewicz who's out there, you're making him wear it, who's getting so mad, he's stomping around, having a meltdown on the mound. If you're a Blue Jays fan and you relish the suffering of the Rangers, this is as good as it gets. If you're a Rangers fan, boy, sure hope Jack Leiter is, Jacob deGrom, but immediately, because otherwise it is tough sledding. And I don't know, their front office, they've just changed, they promoted John Daniels to president and they brought in a new, Chris Young, the very tall former big leaguer, is their GM, a very smart guy, but they're in a rough spot. And as a Blue Jays watcher and fan, analyst, however you want to describe what I do, I was like, boy, it sucks to be them. That's my big takeaway from the weekend. I do not envy a single Rangers fan, and they should maybe contract the team and shoot them all into space. But, that's all.
As you were talking... My journalist brain was going and I was like, actually, it might be an interesting story if you did a sort of timeline TikTok from that 2016 series and where the Blue Jays went and how they got to where they are and then where the Rangers went and what were the paths these two teams actually did take and what were the Blue Jays doing behind the scenes? I mean, if it was 2016, that was the year that they drafted Bo and Cavan, I believe, right? They were 2016 draft picks.
I think so. They had already Vlad signed in 2015.
Yeah,
so Vladimir Guerrero Jr. was already in the system. So again, the Blue Jays have a generational talent on the diamond right now at 21 years old. And the Rangers are our best prospect is a second baseman. And he's in the back half of the top 100.
But I mean, from that perspective, see already mm-hmm. the Blue Jays are they have a winner on the team. But behind the scenes, they're, as you say, they've signed Vladdy. They're drafting a guy like Bo Bichette. I'd have to look and see what else they've done and what happened in 2015 and everything. But I do think, I don't know that I'm going to write that story, but but maybe someone will listen to this and write it for me. I don't know. Free idea.
We will combine. It'll be a collaborative effort. It'll be the Spin Rate collab that everyone has been clamoring for. That we'll write the parallel, what would it take? What could have happened that could have reversed the fortunes? What would it have taken for the Blue Jays to be where the Rangers are and the Rangers to be where the Blue Jays are? Because, in 2019, both teams were really bad. Mm-hmm. But
mm-hmm. I think the Blue Jays were worse, right? The Blue Jays finished with one of the – because they – I'm just thinking of the draft pick and stuff. And Blue Jays picked fifth. And mm-hmm. I don't think the Rangers picked ahead of them that year. So they would have finished with a better record in 2019. Sorry, the Rangers would have finished with a better record in 2019 than the Blue Jays, right? I know you're looking it up.
They did. The Rangers were still bad. They were 78-84, and that was the year that the Blue Jays lost 95 games. That said, the Rangers lost 95 games in 2018. So they had lost 95 games the year before. The Rangers traded Yu Darvish, famously. Mm-hmm. But of course, they got Willie Calhoun in exchange for Yu Darvish. And Willie Calhoun is, not that good. He was having a nice season. He's injured now, but he's 26-year-old DH. So he was he having a nice season? He had an OPS of 708. Nice season. Maybe I'm using that a little bit liberally. But a really kind of tale of two franchises headed in different directions, or not even headed in different directions. They've been headed in different directions for a few years, and now they are already arrived at very different destinations with the Blue Jays looking pretty good.
Can I just make a random point?
Yes.
I just read this and I was thinking about it. The Red Sox really timed their terrible season perfectly. Because, you know, in the long run, who cares about the 2020 season? It was 60 games. It was a weird year. And so they play bad. They're awful that year. And then they end up getting a really nice draft pick. They were picked, I think, fourth in the draft this year. And the way that things fell, we mentioned this last week, they ended up getting a really nice player. I think it was that Meyer kid. And, mm-hmm. and he was sort of like one of the kids that could have gone first overall and, you know, good all around player. And this is the Red Sox, the 55 win Red Sox or 56 win Red Sox picking ahead of the 30 win Orioles this year. Because of the way things fell in 2020. And the Red Sox look like they're built pretty well. I mean, I guess you can never predict with the Red Sox, but I just thought that was funny. I was like, you know, they timed their bad season really well because they end up getting a good draft pick. And then the next year, they're first in the American League East in a season where the Yankees are a mess. And I don't know, like really anything could happen in the AL East this year.
The Red Sox are, we'll move on, but mm-hmm. the Red Sox last 10 years are insane. The Red Sox in the last 10 years have finished last in the American League East four times. Four times they finished last in the division. They've also won the World Series twice in the last 10 years, which is sickening. Sickening. If you are a fan of the steady, predictable, reliable, you know, mediocrity of the Toronto Blue Jays. Because like the 2012 Red Sox were bad. And then the 2013 Red Sox won the World Series. That was like everything worked. That team was, entertaining, that 2013 Red Sox team. Now, I covered that closely because I was a national guy then. So I was like writing about whoever's in the World Series. And that Red Sox team just like did everything right. Like they couldn't win for losing or the opposite. They just, everything worked. And they were a good team in the regular season. And then they like stormed to the playoffs and then won. Then last place. Then they were good again. And then they got with that insane, you know, homegrown core with the Benintendis and the Betts and Bogarts and, you know, Devers and everybody else. They, and the help of whatever other external support systems that they were able to tap into in 2018. The 2018 Red Sox were as good a team as I've ever seen in my entire life. They won 108 games that year. And then they just rolled over the Dodgers in the World Series. They were insanely good. So good all around. And then they go immediately 2 years later, they're in last place again. What the fuck? It's crazy. Now here they're in first place.
Yeah.
And not only are they in first place right now, if there are maybe a few cracks in the little Red Sox foundation, here comes Chris Sale making rehab starts. Chris Sale, who is not even low, like probably my favorite pitcher to watch pitch in the entire world. He's not of this planet. It's ridiculous. I love to watch him. And there he is on the Red Sox. So I don't know what lesson there is to learn from this. Maybe the Red Sox can be the example for the Rangers of like feast and famine, like from the ashes and then back down to the ashes again. But you know, flag fly forever. Red Sox have won the World Series four times this century, which is more than the Blue Jays. All that success made the Red Sox a very popular team. And many baseball fans, especially those of us who were going to games in the bad old days of like 2006, 2007, 2008, while Caitlin was but a young youth, you know, wandering the streets of Scarborough, the Red Sox fans used to take over the Rogers Center. There would be Red Sox fans as far as the eye can see. They would be there in their Euclid shirts. Terrible people. Awful. Cheering, having fun, celebrating a World Series success. And then another one, and then another one, and then another one. I resent them all. But that won't be happening this year for a variety of reasons. But so excited are Blue Jays fans to be attending live baseball that I'm sure that they will buy every ticket available as the Blue Jays return home on July 30th, made official this weekend. Caitlin, are you excited to watch baseball live and in person from your seat in the press box with wearing a hazmat suit?
I am excited. Like, let's pull back a little and just examine last week, because I feel like being a sports fan in the city last week was fairly stressful. I think that maybe a lot of sports fans, I'm talking about Jays fans, TFC fans, maybe some tennis fans, just all around sports fans in the city, I think we're getting really invested in the sort of hope, the building hope, and that their teams would be coming back. And I think it was like Wednesday, if I recall, that it was just this crazy day where we were sort of getting trickles of information about TFC, and it sort of looked optimistic, and then it didn't look optimistic, and then TFC announced that they were coming back home and they were going to play in Toronto, and then there was some report, like, not so fast, the government hasn't given, they're okay, and then there was another report from TFC saying, no, like, we don't need the national interest exemption for this game because we're just using or playing with vaccinated players. And by the way, I read that, and this was like a few weeks ago or something, but the MLS has a very high vaccination rate in their league. I think they're close to 95%. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's pretty good. I mean, MLB is 85%, so it's not too far off, but 95% or close to 95% for MLS. So when you talk about vaccinated players, that is the large majority, I think, of the team. But anyway, so that was Wednesday. And I think at the end of the day, it was kind of cleared, like, TFC is going to play here. And certainly that gave a lot of optimism, I think, to Blue Jays fans that they were going to hopefully receive similar news in a few days. And, you know, I am involved in this story both as a resident of Toronto that would really like to see the team come back and see a part of this city sort of come alive again. And I am invested in it also as a reporter, because having the team here makes a huge difference in the way that I do my job. And just from like my own perspective, I think that having the team here would just really benefit me from, like, you know, a mental health perspective, even just kind of get differentiating, like, a sort of marking of, like, that the this pandemic, and then it's sort of coming to an end here. And, like, you know, I think it would just be helpful to have the team here. So I was very kind of stressed out all over, because I was just waiting for the news. I wanted to write about it. I needed to know about it. But also I was like feeling a little bit stressed just as like a person, just like, is this going to happen? Like, how is this? Mm-hmm. Am I going to know how I'm going to do my job for the next 2 months? Am I going to have maybe a return to some normalcy for me from a career perspective? I was feeling a lot of emotion. So when it finally happened, it was a kind of a sense of relief and excitement. I was happy that it happened on Friday, because I didn't really want the decision to drag on any more, because I had plans on Saturday.
I think so. You've said some very important things. You and I, a lot of people, the word I keep coming back to, and I don't remember where I read this, might've been like a Vox or something like that, but it's languishing. So those of us who are somewhat, you know, removed from the harsh realities of the pandemic, of COVID-19, people who have the safety, security, privilege to work at home, to have their kids that they can keep home, and all of those things that we've all abundantly aware of. We're not in the trenches dealing with the grief that has been wrought across the world, across North America from some COVID-19. I don't mean to speak for you, but I mean, that's where I'm set. I am. But at the same time.
No, I'm the same. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
We're not frontline workers.
No.
We're not healthcare workers.
Nope.
It's been a challenge for everybody, but I agree mm-hmm. with you. The challenge that we had sort of pales in comparison to some what other people had to face.
Exactly. But that doesn't mean that we're robots. And that doesn't mean that the effects of living this in this kind of stasis, we're not immune to those effects as well. And the word languishing is the word that I think a lot of people have been feeling because it's been dragging on for so long. It's been so long since we've been able to do the things that do bring us joy, that do give us something to look forward to. You know, there's the idea of, if you've seen the movie Palm Springs or Groundhog Day, like that's a nightmare. Those movies are positioned as like that's those people will do anything to get out of that, to be living the same day over and over. Palm Springs, shout out, such a good movie. Shout out over and over and over and over. And that's what a lot of us have felt like we've been doing again, which is, and then also dealing with the guilt of feeling shitty about it because it's like, is it really that bad? I come and I talk about baseball on a podcast. I play video games. I continue to work. I get my paycheck. I buy stuff online, whatever it is. Like, should I really be feeling bad? Like that, all that stuff combines for these frail mental health times that we're all dealing with. Whether or not we are, again, losing family because that's a whole other and a whole other level, but we've been languishing. Having something to look forward to. Having something to look forward to that you know is fun, that's outdoors, that is a place that many of us use as a place to put our feelings anyway, right? That's what sports for a lot of folks is. Sports is a place where feelings are allowed to happen. People feel their feelings and they're in their feelings when they're watching sports, yelling, screaming, hating, loving, all that sort of stuff. So the idea of getting that back, getting that shred of normalcy, shred of outlet for pent up feelings and guilt and all this different shit that's been going on, is incredibly encouraging. Like, you know, catch me standing on my chair, screaming OK Blue Jays with tears running down my face. like I'm a 90-year-old Scouser singing You'll Never Walk Alone. It's going to be the best OK Blue Jays of all time. People will be reduced to just piles of tears and puddles of emotions because when the strains of OK Blue Jays ring out across a half full, look, Caitlin, I can see her right now on camera, feeling it. She's feeling the emotion. It's going to be wild. And I'm excited. I've never been more excited for OK Blue Jays in my whole life. And if they cut away on commercial in the first game back, strongly worded letter. You, all the good people, you know, the people who have worked through, again, very tough times, trying to figure out how to make a pandemic baseball broadcast happen. Shout out to all of them. So if you're in the truck with someone, you don't know what they're doing. You're wearing masks and you're doing camera op, whatever. Don't cut away from OK Blue Jays on the first game back. I will be very, very disappointed.
I will take a video of it and post it on Twitter. Just in
good.
Case.
Good. More Spin Rate coming up right after these words from our sponsors.
I need to preface this with saying that I am a very easy crier. Everything makes me cry. But I am actually like a little bit worried that I'm going to cry at the first game back. And only because I'm like, that might make me seem unprofessional. But I might. Maybe I'll, hopefully there's social distancing in the press box and no one can see or hear me crying in that moment. But yeah, like everything you said totally rings true. And I was not articulating it before because I think I'm still sort of like working my mind through the fact that they're coming back. Like when you cover a story so closely and when you cover it as long as I've covered that story, like literally a year, I've been basically covering the Blue Jays requesting to play in Toronto and playing elsewhere and wanting to play in Toronto and everything. So I'm still kind of like working my way through. And because it's not till July 30th, which like sidebar is also the trade deadline. So that's going to be a really busy day for me. But I think I'm still kind of like working my way through it. And like processing that they're actually coming back because like you kind of indicated, like I've been living what feels like the same day over and over and over again and doing my job from my living room. And I think that I was getting to a point where I just felt like I tapped out the capacity of which I felt like I was doing this job well from the seat that I'm sitting in right now. And I was really, really, really starting to miss having those in-person interactions, having the perspective of being there at the ballpark and hearing things for myself and seeing things for myself and observing things for myself and having that in my stories that gives the readers a different perspective or a little bit of extra knowledge or insight into something that they care about. And I think that just also changing up the routine is helpful at this point. And yeah, like I was saying before, it just kind of gives a nice, closing of what has been a fairly challenging chapter in my career to cover a team for, more than a year, because I started doing it this way in March 2020 when I came back from spring training and I didn't know what the job was going to be. And I have probably been on, I don't even want to estimate how many Zoom calls I've been on with the Blue Jays. Gosh, like averaging four a day since February this year. And there was more last year. So a lot of Zoom calls. And it's just so exciting to know that the Blue Jays are going to be coming back and the team's going to be here. And I should say, like, that in reporting this story out on Friday and Saturday a little bit, the players talked a little bit on Friday. And, you know, one of the main points is they are very excited to see the fans. That is like the overwhelming sentiment from the players, is they just cannot wait to see the fans. And they, you know, credit to them, all gave a lot of praise to the people of Buffalo, to the Bisons organization that totally welcomed them in unideal circumstances for that team too. Like their minor league team, obviously it wasn't playing last year, but this year it was displaced. They've been playing in Trenton, and the people of Buffalo totally embraced them outside of when they're playing the Yankees. But I think that the Blue Jays players have done a good job of not letting this be a distraction, not really letting it be an excuse to not play well on the field. But I think that now that the decision is that they will be able to come to Toronto and there is a date and there's no more uncertainty, I think some of them were able to just say, kind of have a sigh of relief and say, like, it's over, like this chapter is over. And that's sort of how I was feeling a little bit too, just from my perspective of, like, as a role, as a reporter, covering this team. And, you know, Mark Shapiro too was talking a lot about, excited about the fans. And I'm sure that he's been at the forefront of this. And, you know, he talked a little bit about how, basically, for the last year or so, he has been getting a crash course in government relations, essentially, which is not necessarily something that he had done. He's had a really long, interesting baseball career, but I think this would have been the first time that he would have been extensively working with the federal, provincial, and municipal governments, and, you know, dealing with cross-border travel and all that stuff. So for the entire organization, this has been a challenge that I think most, they all kind of rose to, but I think that now that there's a closure to it, I think everyone is stepping back and saying, it is just very nice that it is over now. We know we're coming back to Toronto and we are going to be back to some level of normalcy for the team, for the people of Toronto, for the fan base, for everybody in the organization. And I think I agree with you that I feel like even if I kind of imagine what July 30th will be, like, I never covered the 2015 and 2016 teams. Mm-hmm. And I was at some playoff games as a fan. But I imagine, like, the energy and the excitement is going to be kind of like that. Different. It's not going to be like a playoff atmosphere where there's like maybe tension and like that kind of excitement. Mm-hmm. But I just think like the energy is going to be like palpable, you know?
It's going to be excitement that is rarely seen in a July game against, I don't know, whoever they're playing.
The Royals.
So there was once an exciting July game against the Orioles. Might've been August, but
No, the Royals.
In 2015. Yeah, in 2015, there was like the Blue Jays and Royals played like a really good series.
That included, oh, yes, I remember like, that.
Like a lot of heated words and people coming out of the dugout and stuff.
Yeah, there was a fight or something, yeah.
Mark Shapiro, good to hear that he is getting into the lucrative world of lobbying. I think that that is a good career change for him. He can make a ton of money. GR is a whole different kettle of fish in terms of like just working with the government because a lot of the – anyway, never mind. I almost like went a little too far. It's okay to cry in the press box. It's okay to cry at the you will not be the first person to cry in the Rogers Center press box. in that I watched Tim Lincecum's second no-hitter against the Padres in the Rogers Center's press box, and it was I reacted. Let's just say that. I had a reaction.
I don't think it'll be the first time I've cried in the press box. I've probably like stressed out about a story and after all the other reporters leave. I'm just weeping at my desk because like I missed my deadline or something. It was actually in those early days when I covered the team and I was like, did not know what I was doing. It's probably not the first time I'm going to cry in that press box.
I didn't cry in the press box, but in hindsight, maybe what I saw, I've told this story before about watching Roy Halladay and his kids like come wandering out onto the mound after in 2014 on Masahiro Tanaka's first start after Halladay just retired, and he threw out the first pitch and he like came out with his kids and they were like pretending and like pitching and he was like standing on the mound, and even though it was like dark and there was like nobody in the press box and I was in what is now the press box, and I, at the time I just was like this was such a cool thing to see, and now if I you know, it makes me want to cry thinking about it, but here we are. Now, so you wrote about this. We should talk more, not as much about our feelings, as much as what do people need to know if they are going? If they did acquire tickets, what are the, like the high level, like give me the bullet points, what do they need to know about what it's going to be like? What's it going to look and feel like a game at the Rogers Center in 2021?
Well, the capacity is 15,000, so that's decent. I think that works out to be about 30% capacity of the Rogers Center. It's obviously a pretty big place. So 15,000 means that it's kind of classified as an outdoor venue. And I think there was a little bit of question marks about what the Rogers Center is going to be because it has a roof, but obviously it's big enough. They have enough air ventilation, and Mark Shapiro seemed to indicate that they have a plan for if there is rain and they have to close the roof, that they have a plan that they can have some openings, some slots open. There's enough air circulation and it is a huge place. So I think it's fair that the capacity should not be limited to like 1,000 as an indoor venue. So that is the capacity limit. I probably need to pull up the email to read closely, but I do know that ticket information is first going out to season ticket holders, I think, and then maybe people who have purchased like game packs and stuff like that. And I think the general public sale goes on Thursday, I believe. Some stuff that they also said, it sounds like there's going to be different kind of seating arrangements. So the 500 level is not going to be opened. It's going to be only the 100 and 200 level. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be, let me just read it so I don't mess this up. Because I think there's, where is it? There's going to be, oh, here it is. So there's standard traditional seating, two-thirds of bowl tickets, and then physically distanced pods of up to 4 seats. And that will be one-third of the ticket. So that's for the first 10 home games. And I think masks will be required outside of when you're eating and drinking and outside of really young children, I think age 2 and under, screening symptoms prior to going in. It's mobile ticketing, so less touching. I think there's a lot of other sort of minor things, cashless payment, all that kind of stuff. Some physical distancing with that throughout the stadium. But that is sort of what I know now. There's probably more information coming. You know, I think it's actually going to be a pretty hot ticket to get for these games.
I think so too.
I'm glad that I have my ticket, which is a BBWA pass that lets me in the building.
I don't have one of those, Caitlin. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Well.
Well, what are you going to do about it? No, that it's exciting. It's really exciting. It's exciting for the opportunity to do the things that you love to do, that so many fans love to do. Go in, write, you know, you get to write your stories. You might get to talk to players on the field. We get to watch games. You get to watch George Springer in a Blue Jays jersey for the first time in Toronto. Get to watch Hyunjin Ryu in a Blue Jays jersey for the first time in Toronto. There will be 15,000 people standing and applauding for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. when he comes to the plate. Bo Bichette, all these guys. It's going to be a great time. They're playing the Rangers, or the Royals, which is agreeable because the Royals are dog shit. So maybe it's not quite guaranteed win night, but you think that if nothing else, the folks who do attend, and I don't know that I won't. I mean, I'm not going to actively try to acquire tickets, but you know, sometimes the universe comes for me. Sometimes the universe comes and does things that I appreciate. So I'm just going to put it out there in the world, put that good energy out there, and maybe one day these tickets will arrive at my inbox, like when my blessed wife bought me tickets for Vlad's first game. Like out of nowhere, she was like, here's an email. And I was like, what the fuck is this? And I was like, oh my gosh. So I sat by myself behind the plate. No tears that time, but we had some fun. And Vlad's walk-up song the first time to the plate was Old Town Road, which...
I remember that.
It was a choice.
I don't think he kept it very long.
He's 20, you know. Not that Little Nas X isn't cool or anything like that, but anyway. Got anything else? We've been going on and on and on for like almost an hour already.
Well, yeah, and I think there's even more we could talk about the home, but I think that we'll have time to discuss that. We could talk about what the impact on being in front of fans could have on the players and on the field, right? Like Mark Shapiro kind of indicated that he feels like it could be a competitive advantage for the Blue Jays to get that sort of boost at a really pivotal time of the year, trade deadline.
I think it could be a competitive advantage in that they will have recovered from the competitive disadvantage of playing in Dunedin and in Buffalo and having had for a lot of the time being the opposing team in their own stadium for the first, you know, two months of the season. Much has been made, and I know that Dan Shulman was talking about it a bunch on the broadcast today. The Blue Jays have a great time. The Blue Jays get along really well. I'm not worried about their energy level. They're not, you know, that they've been down in the dumps or feeling like some kind of redheaded stepchild that nobody loves. Like that's not who they are, and they care for each other. And there's been some talk and some speculation, like maybe this is like brought them together, and they're closer than they ever would have been. And it's like, okay. The biggest issue, the thing that I come back to, and while I've taken many kind of regressive steps back to like team chemistry and like good guys, and the Blue Jays are good because they're good, right? They score a ton of runs because they have a lot of good offensive players. And whether I'm there clanging my jewelry together or not, you know, like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is going to have a good at bat because that's what he does. And Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is going to crush a mistake because that's what he does when he gets them. So I'm not as convinced about the competitive advantage. I'm just, you know, again, I was on the radio this weekend talking about it, like the training advantages, getting back to having a big league clubhouse that's theirs, that they have their locker, having the, you know, all the training tools and the, you know, that's big league quality. It has always been big league quality. You know, I know that Mark Spott was talking about they've upgraded the sound system. They upgraded the batting cages. Like it's going to be a better environment. The Blue Jays deserve credit for what they've done as an organization to make these places feel like home, for spending money, trying to get Buffalo better, trying to get Dunedin from not being literally an A-ball stadium to hosting pro players. So I think it's going to be great. It's going to be great for when you're watching on TV. Number one, it's going to be great for when you're watching on TV because you have a better sense of how far home runs go because they don't land in a schoolyard or like on the highway. You're like, oh, okay, second deck, fifth deck, you know, into the bullpen, whatever, back to normalcy in that way. But I also think that they're going to be going back to like a real radio broadcast. Is that something that maybe I heard or read, or is that just wishful thinking?
I have not heard anything about that, but I also haven't been inquiring about that. So I am not the person who would necessarily know. But I don't know.
Last Friday,
I have heard that potentially Sportsnet would want to be bringing their broadcasters back into the building. Obviously, the situation is now that they're doing it from home, right? Like, well, I guess Dan's in studio and then Buck and Tabby are at home. So I would imagine that they're going to want to bring broadcasters back into the building if they can do that. But I've not heard anything specific about the radio broadcast.
I listened last Friday night. I drove 45 minutes in one direction or 40 minutes in one direction. Then I picked up some pizza and turned around and drove 40 minutes back the other way because the pizza in Orangeville, sadly, is not up to snuff. And I listened to the Blue Jays game the whole time and wow, it's difficult to do a simulcast. That was last Friday when it was Buck and Tabby. It is hard to not let the pictures do the talking when you don't have them. When they're like, hey, you know, just remarking on it, it's a hard job. And it's not one that anyone is, if you're not Vin Scully, you're not going to be able to do it well. And they cannot get Ben Wagner and anybody else, a warm body, back into that radio booth soon enough. Because, again, I could criticize Buck and Tabby, but I don't think it's their fault. I think this is just something that has been done at the expense of fan and the fan experience. Listening to the games on the radio when you can is awesome when it's right, because it's just a totally different ballgame. And Ben Wagner's really good. Again, it's obviously a shame with Wilner, but Wilner's landing on his feet and doing great stuff at the Star. But Ben Wagner's good, so we'll see what happens with the radio broadcast. Fingers crossed. This is like another sort of bump, a little bonus for fans, for people who love the Blue Jays, to come out of being able to come back to Toronto. Caitlin, what else you got? You got any exciting stories? Any alternate history, parallel universe, Back to the Future 4, Texas Rangers edition coming up for the people this week?
I do not, but everyone loves it when it's my week on power rankings, which is tomorrow. So everyone, you know the drill. Go to the power rankings, give it a like, write a comment that says you did a great job, Caitlin. We love your power rankings. And then we'll see. I mean, there's going to be more coming this week, probably more reporting on the Toronto situation because there's just more to trickle out. And I think that's just the story around the Blue Jays right now. Obviously, a big series against the Boston Red Sox that I will be following along. But yeah, I don't know. I think I was just so long planning for this Toronto thing that it's really occupied my mind for the last couple of days. And now that I know they're coming back, it's an opportunity to kind of set up, you know, what I can write down the road. But I don't know. From here on out, it's going to be a lot of trade deadline stories as well, because that's what people like to read right now. So that's what I write. I give the people what they want. So if you have a trade deadline idea story, let me know.
I will. It'll be about them when the Rangers don't trade Joey Gallo, because they're in such a dire straits that the return for Joey Gallo isn't going to be enough to save them.
I am writing a Joey Gallo story. I forgot.
Yes! That. Give the people what they want.
That's coming out later this week.
Her name is Caitlin McGrath. You can read all the things that she's described on The Athletic. My name is Drew Fairservice. You can listen to the show. We'll be back midweek with another one. As you know, we do two of these a week, and then we have a lot of fun doing it. So for Caitlin, my name is Drew. Talk to you next time on Spin Room.